Hi, my name's Elizabeth Gillam.
I'm Sally Arnold.
Matthew Dunstan.
Natasha Vanzetti.
I'm Christian Marley.
You're listening to Not Another Business Show, inspiring entrepreneurs to think smart, not small. Brought to you by Daunted to Done, your virtual project manager.
There are over 4,000 people registered as business coaches in Australia. So it goes without saying that a lot of small business owners look at getting a business coach at one time or another during their business life. This week, we're going to look at the different styles of business coaching. How should you choose a business coach? And how do you know it's time you need to get a business coach? And what should you expect when you take a coach on?
I'm Sally Arnold. I'm an author, I'm a speaker, and I'm a high-performance coach. My business is Creating Encores. What I do is I specialise in turning around stuck businesses and individuals. I've been actually incredibly lucky to have won some amazing awards from Business 3000 right through to Antel for my innovative high-performance coaching methodology.
I'm Christian Marley, the retail guy, and my intention is to help motivated retailers build the business of their dreams. I'm a massive believer that now is more so than ever the best time to develop a retail business and flourish and prosper through it. That's what I do and that's what I'm about.
So I'm Natasha Vanzetti. I'm a discovery coach, and what I get to do now is help people discover what it is they actually want to do with their business and then what's standing in their way.
Hi, my name's Elizabeth Gillam. I work in franchising and I specialise in creating high-performance franchisees.
My name's Matthew Dunstan. I run Rising Tide Ventures. Essentially what I do is I help aspiring small business owners grow their business. Been working in that sort of field for over 20 years now, primarily in the business-to-business market and in IT. I've worked for companies like Microsoft, where I was a senior leader there for almost 10 years. I've lectured for MBA programs like the Australian Graduate School of Management and Griffith University's program. And these days I like to turn those talents towards people who are trying to grow their own business. So I work very closely with startups and entrepreneurs. So that's what we do.
The song says, let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. So let's kick off today's conversation on business coaching by finding out about people who have held a strong corporate role for most of their career and now decided to take the plunge into small business. It's a very different skill set from corporate management to entrepreneur. How do you navigate a transition like that? That's the role of a startup business coach, someone like Matt Dunstan from Rising Tide Ventures. So I asked Matt, when startup businesses come to him for coaching, what's the biggest myth his clients come into business with?
So the biggest myth that a lot of people discover very quickly isn't true is that it's going to be easier than working for someone else. The truth of starting and running your own business is that it's pretty hard work. The hours are longer. Invariably, the pay is worse, at least, you know, in the startup phases. And, you know, people are having to, you know, forfeit weekends and nights and family holidays while they're getting their business up and running. That's probably the biggest myth, perhaps closely followed by, if I was really good at doing this before, then I'll be able to sell that and build a business out of it. And, you know, often people find that being a specialist isn't quite enough to grow the business.
Obviously, for startup businesses, the challenges facing them are very different to the challenges of an established business, or say one wanting to expand and seek venture capital. So what are the biggest questions facing a startup business that a coach needs to be able to assist with?
A really common question is, how do I get in front of potential customers? You know, where do I find them? And, you know, that's one of the fundamental questions that you've got to resolve. If you can't if you can't find the people to even, you know, get some market feedback on without asking them to pay, then how much harder is it going to be to find them when you do want them to pay?
It makes sense that a startup business would need to find a business coach that can assist them with ideas and ways to get in front of their potential customers. The other thing that Matt shared with me that is a common coaching conversation for startup businesses is where's the best place to put their time, money, and focus?
By and large, people are focusing on internal facing things, and really it's a bit of a crutch. You know, people do that because, you know, maybe their confidence isn't where it should be. The single biggest thing that will make a difference to their business is, you know, crafting a bit of a plan for getting in front of the right people.
So for a startup business looking to find a business coach, you would be looking for someone who has started their own businesses successfully. Someone who can guide and direct you into the best places to put your focus, offer suggestions of ways to identify and get in front of your ideal clients, and someone who can help you make sense out of your numbers. Because without knowing your break-even points, you don't really have a business to begin with. But what about people who don't really have a clear direction with their business? They need someone who can help them figure out their passion within the business field and begin to craft their business around their gifts and talents. That is the role of a discovery coach. I asked Natasha Vanzetti what a discovery coach actually is.
So a discovery coach is a term that I phrased because I didn't quite fit into the boxes that were out there. I truly believe that we can, you know, just because it doesn't exist doesn't mean we can't create it. So I thought discovery coach was a really good way to articulate the work that I was now doing with people, you know, going through the discovery phase of helping them figure out what they actually wanted their business to be all about. And it's not necessarily based on the past experience that they've had in their career. And then also what's standing in their way, because quite often we can get the big idea, but we hit so many other roadblocks along the way. So my job now is to discover the idea, but also the roadblocks and help people get through both of those.
Now, I have to admit, this one fascinated me. I know a lot of business owners who don't necessarily feel like they are driven by any real purpose. They fall into a business because it's something they've always done, or perhaps they saw an opportunity, but they're not actually passionate about it. But what Natasha helps these people to figure out is where their passion really is and where it is that they are happiest and most fulfilled.
I basically break it down into three steps with people now. So it's a process that I've refined over the last few years. So the first step is we go through their story. So what is it that's shifted for them? What's changed? Why is it they're feeling unsettled and unfulfilled in what they're currently doing? Then we go through the style, like how do they actually like to work and when do they feel they're most creative? And then the third step is actually their experience. And I find it's really important to put that step last because our experience can really cloud where we think we should go next. And the shoulds play a big part in this because if you've been in a career for 5, 10, 15 or 20 years, you kind of have that almost belief that that's all you've got value in and that's all that you can offer. But when we unpack it in reverse and we look at your story and your style first and then take the bits of your experiences actually that you do want to take forward, that's when we can define that anchor point.
This all sounds great. And I know people like Simon Sinek, Oprah and Steve Jobs are or were big advocates on finding what it is that floats your boat and doing that. Natasha told me that for many of us, it's a niggling feeling that there's something more that we should be doing. Back in the 60s, that would have been the time to drop out of society, go and live in an ashram in India and find a guru to study with. These days, there are plenty of programs where you can drop 50 grand and stare at your navel for months trying to figure it all out. But what Natasha told me is that niggling realization is the first step that people often take into diving deeper with a coach like herself to find out what that thing really is for them.
Realization is the first step. It's realizing where you are is not where you want to be. And some of us, that happens quite early on. I'm in my 40s now, and it was really, you know, my late 30s that I'd figured out that where I was wasn't where I wanted to be anymore, but I didn't know what the next step was. So I think once people realize that something needs to shift, even if they don't know what it is, just paying attention to the fact that something needs to change is a really important part of the process. The next one is discovery. Now, you said, you know, jokingly, take 6 months and spend 50 grand to figure it out. I tried to figure it out by sitting there doing nothing and spinning around in a little circle, trying to figure it all out in my head, but that you can't do it that way. So the discovery process is a really important one about understanding what actually makes you come alive and what gives you the energy. So what are you doing on a day-to-day basis that gives you energy and makes time fly, as opposed to some of the jobs that you do and you may be really good at, but you'd be quite happy to let them go forever. Stage three is action. You need to take action. You need to go out there and try different things and test different ideas to get the answers, because you can't sit there and figure this idea out in your head, because the idea could be great, but until you go out and take action on that and actually implement that and work with clients or put a product to market, you're not going to get that understanding, that internal feeling of, does this actually energize me and feel great, or is it just another idea that's probably suited to someone a little bit better? So, and then you've got the fear and the doubt. So the fear and the doubt is always going to come and smack you in the face whenever you're pushing out of the comfort zone and trying something new and testing an idea that might be a little bit off center to what you've been known for. That's one that I think is really important for people to recognize and seek support and help on, because if we let the fear take over, we just go back to our little safety zone and stick there, and you know, nothing much else will happen. And then stage five is coming home. It is the coming to that realization and understanding through the process of, you know, feeling your way to what's right and what's not and what you can move forward on and what you can let go of. And then you're coming home to that place that just lights you up. We actually are doing work that you love. Now, it's not an overnight process. It is something that does take some time, but I think it's really, really worth it.
Natasha was adamant in our discussions that everyone has that fire inside them, that thing that makes their eyes sparkle. So if you feel as though you've been struggling with your why, a discovery coach is probably your best choice in coaches. If you're looking to get into business or you're at the startup phase, there are a couple of good options to keep in mind in terms of coaching. The next coaching niche worth talking about is retail. Having spent a good 20 years of my life in the retail game, I can honestly say I reckon that retailing is just about the toughest gig on the planet. They have absolute unique challenges that faces no other business style. And it's why the retail guy, Christian Marnie, has built his business around helping this particular industry out. He explained to me that within the retail industry, he is coaching people predominantly around two main areas.
So the first one is getting bogged down too much in price propositioning and thinking that online is a beast that can't be tamed. It then becomes a self-fulfilling barrier that retailers at any level struggle to get over or around. For brick-and-mortar retailers to survive moving into the next generation, they have to get their head around how they marry up or augment their business so they either integrate online within what they do or partner up with an existing pure play. The second part that I see, you know, businesses struggling with at the moment is just around not knowing clearly enough who their customer is. You know, they have this whole spray and pray approach, and if you ask them who their customer is, it's a really flimsy, wishy-washy answer, and therefore there's so much wastage, slippage, and lost productivity where they don't have an accurate idea of who exactly their marketing is talking to, who they're serving, what are they ranging for, and what problems are specifically that they're solving.
Adding to what Christian just said, retailers are having to deal with leasing issues, many times working with some of the biggest players in the shopping centre space, 7-day staffing rosters, crazy Christmas trading hours, and customers that can, well, just be downright rude. And you can see how, if you own a business within the retail space, getting a coach that understands the nuances of the retail environment would be extremely beneficial. And if we look at what small business faces in the coming years, Christian thinks that the retail space could go one of two ways, meaning our retailing small business owners really need to be on the ball and have access to dedicated business coaches who just get what it is that they do.
I have two visions, and it's a bit like a dream, right? So you have your bad dream and you have your good dream. My bad dream, if I start things off, is that the big guys will keep getting bigger and the small guys will erode and evaporate to a certain level. And I think that there's an element of that that is true and already existent within our retail landscape in Australia, especially. Australia is a really scary place to do business in retail. Our cost centres, our rents and our wages alone are astronomical. So there's all of this hogwash around the international invasion. Costco, I mean, they've put one or two up in Australia so far, and then there's Zara starting to expand and all of that, but it's a lot slower than what I think their original plans were, because they get here and we're only 24 million population. You know, we're not India and we're not Africa and we're not the Americas. You know, we're not Asia. We don't have the population to sustain some of the turnover needs that some of these international retailers require. So there's that as well that might hinder that. So therefore, like the Woolies and the Coles and the big guys have kind of got it on their own terms for a while anyway. I don't know where that will end up. But from a small business perspective, I think the other side of the coin is that with the ability to flex and move and augment and implement new initiatives, and ideally in terms of a customer shopping trend, I think more and more people are looking to shop in a specific way. So if I want tea and I'm a tea connoisseur, you and I've spoken about this, I'll go to T2 or I'll go to the local tea person in my high street shopping precinct, versus back in the day, you know, you could only really get tea from Woolworths or from your supermarket. So there's lots of niche little retail pop-ups or stores now that are doing well based on the fact that they are niche. They are their own experts within the industry, within their local area, whether it's a bike retailer or someone selling tea or someone out there selling scrapbooking material. I don't know what it is, but if there's an advantage, a really strong advantage point to being niche now. And so that's the other thing. But if you're going to be niche, you have to be bloody remarkable.
The other area that can follow on from the retail coaches is franchising. Although not always retail, franchising certainly has a love affair with the Australian populace, and like we've been finding with our other coaches, requires a certain skill set that's been honed by working within these very unique parameters that is a franchise agreement. It's where our franchise coaching expert Elizabeth Gillam comes into play, and I wanted to know why she thinks Australians do have this love affair with franchising.
You know, we are really the franchising capital of the world. There's over 1,160 franchise systems in Australia, and I think it's about 79,000 individual franchised business units in Australia. And I think, you know, we just always, you know, bat for the underdog. We go out and give it a go ourselves. So we're an entrepreneurial convict type nation, I think.
For a start, Elizabeth says it takes a certain personality to make a franchise work well.
It is really the entrepreneurial type person, but not so entrepreneurial that they'll want to go out and do it all themselves, because that works in the reverse. It's a very fine line, but they have to be entrepreneurial to have that go get them to go out and set up and start up a business. They have to be a leader. They have to be able to lead, but by the same token, they have to be able to follow. So it's a very fine line, because you've got to follow systems and processes, but you've also got to lead in your individual unit.
She said the biggest thing she sees with people going into a franchise is the same mistake she made.
One thing I say when looking at a franchise, particularly in the beginning, is lose the excitement head, because that's a mistake I made early on. I just got so excited about the whole process that I didn't actually analyse what I was buying into. I didn't analyse what franchising actually was. I bought a Boost juice in a cup and thought, this is great, I'm going to buy the business, you know, and I got so excited and I was so busy being the perfect franchisee that I didn't make enough money in the beginning. I didn't make the most of my opportunity in the beginning, and that's one thing that I learned. You think you buy a system and a process, so therefore you don't have to work. Technically, anyone can run the business, but, you know, there's times where you've got to work long hours in that business. The number of times I got up at 3 a.m. to prepare rosters, put through payrolls and everything, and then have to front up at the store at 8 a.m. is too many to count on My hands.
There are also questions and situations that only franchisees will face. And Elizabeth told me that she coaches people to look at and ask certain questions when they are looking at a franchise.
Things like, what is the royalty that they're going to charge you? So the difference in franchising, for those that don't understand, is that how the franchisor gets paid is they charge a royalty on every sale that you make. And I work predominantly in food, and I've seen anything from 4% of sales go to the franchisor to up to 11% of sales going to the franchisor. So that's 11 cents in every dollar that you sell over the front counter. Not what you make, not your profit. What you sell goes to the franchisor. And then possibly on top of that, there is an additional percentage that goes to the franchisor to run the marketing campaign. Ask if you've got exclusivity in the actual area that you're trading in. So you do not want to have someone turn around and set up the same sort of shop right beside you or in the shopping centre next door. You want to be able to have that opportunity first. So check out what territory or exclusivity you have in what particular area. Ask the franchisors what experience they have in running a franchise. Importantly, ask them, are they a member of the Franchise Council of Australia? Because that gives an extra sense of validity to the franchisor that you're working with. Most importantly, I recommend that you actually talk to franchisees in the system, existing franchisees and past franchisees. When you go to apply for a franchise, you get something called a disclosure document. And in that disclosure document towards the end, they have to list all existing franchisees and anyone who's been in the franchise system in the last 3 years. And those guys is where the gold is as to whether the franchisor is reputable. So you ask those people things like, what support do they receive from the franchisor? If they say they're going to come out and see you every week, ask other franchisees, do they come out and see you every other week? Ask about the suppliers that supply you. The other question that I'd ask the franchisees is about the business model. So the franchisor will give you a business model, and by that I mean your cost of goods sold will be anywhere between 20 and 30% and your labour should be this and your rent should come out at that. But ask the other franchisees, is that reality? Is that what they are experiencing? But the most poignant question I would ask other franchisees is, would they buy another store in the system? Because that's a telltale sign, you know, whether they're a good franchisor or not.
So, once again, we're seeing that a dedicated coach with direct experience in the area or industry that you are looking for help in will give you a much better result than just Googling business coaches and taking the first person that shows up. One of the lessons for me in putting the episode together is that before you engage the services of any coach, it's critical that you have a clear idea of what it is that you need coaching in or on in the first place. Otherwise, like many I know, you could spend thousands of dollars and not really see the return you're looking for, all because you may not have chosen the best coach to assist you with the specific area you needed. So let's look now at existing businesses. Even within the area of existing businesses, there are specialized coaches to focus on particular goals. One of the existing business coaches I spoke with was Sally Arnold from Creating Encores. And Sally comes from a performing arts background and gets her best success in working with high-performing people. So I thought a good place to start my chat with her would be to find out how she defined high-performing.
Okay, so high performing, it's a really great term. It comes out for me out of the performing arts world. If you're a high performance flautist, which I was, you have to be able to walk onto a stage and pick up your flute and perform to a really discerning audience. So for me, high performance separates the so-called ordinary coaches from the coaches that can get extraordinary results so that clients can basically walk out on a stage, feel confident, be able to connect with an audience and actually move their career even further ahead.
Based on that definition, I was keen to find out then why so many business owners seem to get lackluster results with business coaches.
Oh, that's such a big question. they won't move out of their comfort zone. A lot of people know that they need to change their direction. They need to basically change the career that they're in, but there's absolutely no way that they're going to move out of their comfort zone. It's almost like they want someone to mollycoddle them, to say, you're a good girl, you're a good guy, I can help you, but not someone who's going to say, I need you to look at this, 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 and this, and totally change mindset and look at where you are in your business. Is this the business to be in? So for people that really get stuck, it's generally about staying with a coach that's almost similar to them. For many people, it's about looking at someone who really challenges you.
A lot of the deal about working with a good business coach is being prepared to be challenged. For a lot of us as business owners, we can be somewhat of a control freak, maybe even holding on to some areas of the business that would be best outsourced to others with specialities. Yet for many of us, our small business is almost like our own child. We started it, we built it. It has our time, our energy, our tears, our sweat built into the very foundation. And while we know conceptually that to get us to the next level we may need to bring someone in, the thought of being challenged on decisions we've made, people we've hired, projects we've done, can feel extremely confronting. But part of the role of finding a good coach is to dig. It's to uncover why things are being done a certain way, and then at least get you to explore the possibility of changing things within the business. Sometimes it's about helping an owner to learn to let go of the reins ever so slightly to free them up for other things.
It also can come from fear as well, that am I going to be good enough? Or it can come from someone who, someone who wants to do it themselves as well. I find that also in the performing arts world as well as in the business world. It's like, I'm at this level, no one else can be at this level, no one else even knows as much as I do, so I'm going to stay and keep all my information to myself because I want to be in control. And also, if I go out of control, if I ask someone else to do something for me, this is going to feel like I'm basically losing a part of myself. It's Tracy, it's also a big control issue, especially with entrepreneurs. A lot of entrepreneurs believe they have to do everything themselves because they're the only ones who've got that amazing, brilliant idea, when around them, hundreds and thousands of people have got the same idea. So it's about being humble. It's about saying, I do need some help.
So if you've realised there's an opportunity to work with someone in your business to help you get to the next level, there are a few things you probably want to be asking your prospective coach. Things like, what do they charge? I know some coaches that charge by the hour, anywhere from $50 to a couple of hundred, while others prefer to put clients on a monthly retainer. How long will you be working with them for? Is it a month-by-month basis, or do they sign you for a 12-month contract? How do they work? Do you see them face-to-face? Do you meet with them over Skype, over the phone? Is it a group setting, or is it a one-on-one coaching? How much time do you actually get to spend with the coach? What are their credentials? Have they started and ran a small business? Have they grown one? Think about what it is that you want to achieve in your business. And just like we heard from all of today's experts, find the coach that has the expertise and the runs on the board in the area that you need. Can they give you the names of some people they work with? Give them a call and have a chat. See how they're finding working with the coach. How will they and you know when your time together has come to an end? What success measures are you going to put in place to let you know that you've hit your objectives? Remember, you may just need your coach to get you to that next level. Then you may need to be looking for a different coach who understands the next layer of complexity. Possibly, though, my favorite question to ask a prospective coach is, after you've been chatting with them about your business and getting a feel for whether you would work well together, ask them what they see as the biggest area for opportunity or the thing that needs working on in your business first. Remember, business coaching is a big business. In January 2015, IBIS World released a survey showing that business coaching is a $12 billion a year industry. So there are plenty of fish in the sea. Don't be afraid to keep looking till you hook the best coach for your business for the right amount of time. I do hope you took away some gold from our coaches, and don't forget, if you want to find out any more about any of the coaches today, jump on over to the Meet the Experts page on the Daunted to Done website. A big thanks to this week's experts, Sally Arnold from Creating Encores, Natasha Vanzetti, the Discovery Coach, the Retail Guy, Christian Marnie, Elizabeth Gillam from Franchisee Success, and Matt Dunstan from Rising Tide Ventures. As always though, the biggest thanks goes to you for listening in. Really appreciate the reviews that have been coming in on iTunes, and for all the new listeners who are picking us up in the USA, welcome on board. Until next week, I'm going to leave you with a quote from the now retired American footballer Tom Landry. A coach is someone who tells you what you don't want to hear, who has you see what you don't want to see, so that you can be who you always known you could be.